afternoon, everybody. My name is Nada El-Said. I'm going to talk to you today about single-step conversion of landfill gas to liquid hydrocarbon fuels. So very briefly, I'm going to go through an outline of the presentation. I'm going to give you a little bit of an introduction and a background. I'm going to tell you the progress so far. I'm going to present some of the data that we have, and I'm going to go into a little bit of detail about the future direction for the project. So what is our motivation? Our motivation is fossil fuels, as you all already know, are a finite resource, and the U.S. relies heavily on foreign oil. So it's crucial that we find a U.S. based fuel. The EPA requires an alternative fuel mandate of 36 billion gallons per year by 2022. The Air Force has set their own goal of 50% alternative fuel by 2016. Now, when we say alternative fuel, there are many types of alternative fuels. There is wind, there is hydrogen, there's algae, there's all kinds of alternative fuels that are, there's solar, there's different types of alternative fuels that are under investigation right now. For our purposes, we are going to look at municipal solid waste biomass. There are many reasons for that. It is an abundant and relatively underutilized resource. When I say it is underutilized, it is because in 2010, the EPA estimated that the U.S. has, the EPA has estimated that there is 250 million tons of trash that were generated in the U.S., and most of them went into landfills. And landfills produce landfill gas about 83 meters cubed per ton of municipal solid waste. It has potential to be a carbon neutral energy source. And geographically speaking, we have an advantage because in Florida, we produce the most biomass in the U.S., about 7%. What is landfill gas? Landfill gas is actually composed mostly of methane and carbon dioxide. Both are greenhouse gases. And it is the product of chemical reactions and microorganism interaction with wastes in a landfill. So as greenhouse gases, methane is actually 20 times more powerful than carbon dioxide. When I say that it's more powerful, I mean that it traps radiation more efficiently. And landfills account for 17% of the man-made source of methane. Once again, I'm talking about 250 million tons of trash that are generated in the U.S. So this is a significant number that can be used. So what are the options for decreasing the environmental impact of landfill gas and municipal solid waste? We can flare the gas. It can be burned for electricity. The methane can be condensed. And then we have a slightly different approach. We would like to upgrade the landfill gas to liquid hydrocarbon fuels in a single step for conversion of methane and CO2. I would like to point out at this point that the economics for this project are being explored in an undergraduate design group, and one of the people working on the economic aspect is a student who works in our lab, and he's currently pursuing a project that was previously funded by the Naval Center. So very briefly, our process has improved thermal integration, lower capital costs, and tandem catalysts for reforming and CO hydrogenation. As you can see, we have an intensifier with the catalyst. We're going to have landfill gas and steam going and ultimately get hydrocarbons. What are our overall goals? Our overall goals are to convert the landfill gas and obtain usable hydrocarbons, convert at least 10% of methane and CO2 to get the hydrocarbons, achieve a hydrogen to CO ratio of 2:1, and that's for the second portion, for the Fischer-Tropsch synthesis portion. Use a catalyst that generates synthesis gas and maintain a low temperature. The last three points are all for Fischer-Tropsch. So our approach. We have synthesized a series of catalysts, as you can see in the picture here. The first one is just to support the cerium zirconia. The second picture may not be very very clear over there, The second one is actually after we loaded the metal, and the last four vials are for the platinum, the different platinum loaded catalysts. We characterize those catalysts using temperature program reduction to determine the catalyst reducibility, BET to determine the surface area, and X-ray diffraction to determine the crystal structure. Finally, we're going to do reforming experiments. What is the reaction pathway? The reaction proceeds in three main pathways. There's the triforming quotient for those three reactions. The first two reactions are exothermic. The last reaction, which is the partial oxidation, is gives off some energy, it's endothermic. There's the water gas shift, and finally the Fischer-Tropsch component. I would like to point out that we can modify the stoichiometry, and we can control the feed to get the desired hydrogen to CO ratio. So just as a recap, our project focuses on three different areas. There is the synthesis portion, where we have already synthesized a series of catalysts, hopefully to get the optimum catalyst to convert methane at a low temperature. We characterized our catalysts, and then we are ready to do our reforming experiments very shortly. At the very beginning of the project, we modeled the thermodynamics of the process using a program called ChemCAD, using typical landfill gas composition. The composition varies slightly depending on the geographic location, but we essentially use an equilibrium reactor, and this was our feed composition that we put in, 54% methane, 40% CO2, a little bit of nitrogen, oxygen, and some steam. The challenges that we had, we were trying to overcome the difficulty in reaching a low enough temperature for Fischer-Tropsch while achieving the correct methane to CO conversion and the hydrogen to CO ratio 2:1 for the Fischer-Tropsch synthesis. The ways we tried to solve this problem is we tried to modify our operating conditions, increase our temperature while maintaining constant pressure, and vice versa. We tried to tweak the composition of steam and the landfill gas to achieve the desired conversion at as low temperature as possible. I'm going to show you some of the results that we obtained from the modeling. When we changed the temperature, the effect on the hydrogen to CO ratio while maintaining ambient pressure was, as you can see, our hydrogen to CO ratio increased. It began increasing just under 500 degrees. However, it did not reach the 2:1 ratio that we wanted. The effect on the methane and the CO2 conversion was significant. However, both of them increased significantly as we increased temperature. But we almost achieved very, very close to 100% conversion. When we added steam, we only added up to about 2% steam. As you can see, our conversion for methane increased. However, for CO2, it decreased. The reason, we maintained our temperature at 475 and 1 bar was because one of our goals is to stay at a low temperature for Fischer-Tropsch. So, as you saw before from the previous slide, that our hydrogen CO ratio began increasing just under 500 degrees. That's the reason why our operating conditions for this particular graph was 475 and 180. The effect of steam on hydrogen to CO ratio was, as you can see, the more steam we added, the higher our hydrogen to CO ratio. Then I'm going to go over our actual experimental portion. So then we moved on and we synthesized our catalyst. Our support was a series of zirconia support in a ratio of 0.6 to 0.4. It was synthesized through a co-precipitation method and calcined at 800 degrees C. The reason we picked that particular ratio is because it has a large surface area and it was agreeable with literature values. We also doped the support with an 8% weight nickel and an 8% weight magnesium through incipient wetness. And then we synthesized a series of different platinum-loaded catalysts to determine the effect of lowering the CO2 conversion temperature. The picture here is one of our catalysts. So why did we pick platinum? It's relatively cheaper than other transition metals. It's been shown to be a good promoter in small amounts. It does not add acidity. We do not want any acidic sites because they cause coking and deactivate our catalyst. It only modifies the nickel chemistry and it keeps it reduced. And it's a good promoter and it helps to convert the CO2 at a lower temperature. So our characterization. The first characterization we did was a temperature program reduction to characterize the reducibility of the catalyst, where hydrogen is actually absorbed on the metal oxide surface as the reduction occurs. You can see here I'm holding a picture of the reactor with the catalyst inside right before we do our TPR experiment. Consumption is measured with respect to the temperature. So what is the effect of increasing our platinum content on the reduction temperature? As you can see, the very first line, the red line, has no platinum on it, and you see the first reduction occurs at just under 400 degrees. The more platinum we added, the lower the reduction temperature was, which is essentially what we wanted. So to make it a little bit easier, this is just in table form. You can see the support and the metal loading, our first reduction temperature, like I said, was just under 400 degrees. The more platinum we added, the lower the reduction temperature. Then we got our surface areas through BET. As you can see, we have a relatively large surface area. The surface area decreases slightly as we add some platinum, which is expected because some of the pores may be blocked. So that was not surprising. Then we did X-ray diffraction. The very first line on the very top is just our supported series zirconia. As you can see, there's a cubic fluoride structure. There's no monoclinic phases visible. The second one is of the nickel magnesium rooted onto the support. You can see the nickel magnesium that peaks right here. And then the last four are our platinum samples. As you can see, you notice there is no diffraction lines for platinum, which is expected because we have a low platinum content in our sample. So the bottom four don't have platinum diffraction lines because it's a low platinum content. These are the nickel and magnesium oxide peaks. What is the future direction? We would like to start our reporting experiments, and we're ready to do so in the very near future. We'd like to do post-reaction characterization on the catalyst. We want to combine the reforming catalyst with Fischer tropes to achieve the optimal temperature. And finally, we want to get our hydrocarbons. And with that, I'd like to open the floor for questions. Yes, can you hear me?
Oh yeah, nice
presentation.
Thank you.
I tried to take myself off mute, and then I accidentally muted myself mid-sentence. So I cut off a second ago.
That's okay.
So for your, let's start off, your first reaction experiment that you're thinking to run, are you going to anticipate starting with like the mixture of CO2 and steam, or just kind of try to look at the CO2, the dry reforming initially, or what are you thinking?
I'm initially going to do dry reforming before I venture into the steam reforming portion.
Okay.
It's actually done those already with some other data. I think within your practice.
Okay.
We have some preliminary results of the dry reforming.
Yeah.
For your, do you know for the, I guess your preliminary data for the dry reforming, does it, do you get close to maybe the equilibrium, you know, H2CO, you know, conversions that you might expect, or I guess that might depend on how you are. You might intentionally be running at low conversion. I guess I'm not sure.
I'm still in the process of analyzing those the data from the dry reforming experiments. So it's still very preliminary.
Kevin Walker, I had a question regarding your goal conversions. It looked like you said a goal conversion of methane and carbon dioxide of 10%.
Yes.
Now that's just because you're looking at a lower temperature. I guess my concern is that methane that you're not converting and you're sending it to the Fischer tropes, is that of any worry to you in fouling that catalyst?
I haven't reached the Fischer tropes portion yet, but that is a valid concern. It's just I would like to at least convert 10%. Not saying that I will only convert 10%, but that's just the goal, to at least convert 10%. So ideally, would like to convert higher than that. But yeah, that's a valid concern.
I guess it brings up the second point is only converting 10% of the methane, will that satisfy EPA requirements and the mitigation of landfill gas?
I don't have an answer to that.
We could guess.
Yeah.
This is a single pass, so in a plant, it could be recycled and send the methane back.
Okay. So a recycle loop?
Yeah.
One of the schemes, the design group, they've looked at. Ryan's doing some of that, Devin, from Kanokim, but some of the things they've looked at is recycle versus not recycle, and then, you know, combusting the unwanted products for the energy and not, so that they need like another 2 weeks to get their final version done, so I can't tell you what worked out the best for that, but those are all types of things that they evaluated. Yes, you hear me okay? I'm not sitting very close to the computer.
There are more and more places where they're taking landfill gas to compress natural gas. So that's another option. You have anonymous methane. What do you think are some constraints you may have by choosing one atmosphere for your reactor?
Would you repeat the question? I couldn't hear it, if there is a question.
Mr. Vincent asked what constraints I might have by using one atmosphere. From the ChemCAD modeling, from the thermodynamic modeling, I didn't actually show it in this presentation, but I did try to optimize and increase the pressure, and I saw that it didn't have a significant impact on the conversion. And with that, so we decided to stick to atmospheric, because going at higher pressures does add extra safety issues, and if it doesn't significantly impact my conversion, that was one of the things that we actually did look at. And there was a recently published paper that actually they showed similar results, that the conversion didn't significantly increase with increasing pressure.
I was noticing that in the steam, you were showing the state versus temperature reaction. You were doing that at lower temperatures, is that right?
For the conversion or for the ratio?
The ratio. So in that one, I was wondering whether higher pressure would be advantageous.
Did not significantly impact the conversion. We have it in the appendix.
very, yeah, very small.
That's nowhere near what we want, what we would like it to be. I mean, what was the actual presentation?
Yeah, there's a, thank you for being here. Yeah, there's a balance between adding steam. The more steam you add, the main way to add, increase the hydrogen part. Partial pressure, but the more you add too much steam, then CO2 doesn't want to react, and it's a less favorable oxidant. So it's just trying to just find the middle and conditions to balance both as best as possible.
Any more? Any more questions that you guys would like to ask me at this time?
This is Devin again. I was just looking at some of the impurities that you brought up, the halides and the sulfides, and I know that tars are also an impurity in the LFG gas. One of the things, I guess, that concerns with, you know, developing catalysts is the fouling. You know, by some of these impurities, and I think a lot of people run into that issue, you know, when reforming, you know, unpurified gases like this. So I imagine that will be a step further along in the process, introducing impurities.
Yeah, that I'm not at that point yet, but yeah, that's definitely, of course, that's something that we're looking at. There are other people in the lab who are looking at TARs and impurities for pressure coats. So yeah.
And one of the things you may be interested in is it looked like some previous experiments, as you introduce, you know, tar-type compounds, those extra hydrocarbons in there actually may help your CO2 conversion. So you may find a different balance of steam and, you know, your conversion. Able to, your ability to basically convert the CO2 by adding tars, you may find there may be a little different balance of how much steam you can add as well.
Thank you for that. Yeah, I'll look into that. Thank you. That's something to consider.
So, this is Matt Young from NREL again. Wondering, in terms of your, I guess, the landfill gas, does it have, you know, any moisture or water content in it as it's coming off, any substantial amount, or is any steam that you're going to add be, you know, introduced? I'm just kind of looking at slide 5. You know? I don't know if it's like on a water-free basis or if
it wasn't water.
Just kind of maybe it's just saturated water that comes, you know, like 1 or 2% already. So I guess I'm asking if you're anticipating to introduce additional steam to the landfill gas, or if you think you could run it straight.
We're considering both possibilities. We might have to introduce some steam.
Okay.
You can describe this. This is a different slide, but this is what you use.
Yeah, the composition that I use is in slide 13, actually. So I had 1% steam going in, or 1% water going into the feed. That's without the optimization portion where I added more steam.
Okay.
So it's generally saturated, and there's a little bit of air leak in the handling, so that's why there's a little bit of air in there.
Gotcha. All right, that makes sense.
But you can see from the molecules here, it'll be substoichiometric 2-to-1, just based off of without it, if you convert everything, right? It's basically dry reforming, so it'll basically be 1-to-1.
Right.
Doing something.
Yep. Yeah, okay.
Get the slide with the factory reactions up there. But like the top three reactions here.
It's like 11.
Yeah, good point. Be interesting to see what the relative rates are for the steam reforming versus the dry reforming if you kind of consume all of that steam first as opposed to the CO2.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I'll look at that.
A quantitative or qualitative difference are you referring to?
Oh, for the...
The difference rates, yeah.
For the rates, I guess I would... Well, both, but qualitatively, do you know, yeah, which is faster? Like, I mean, will all of the CO2 be converted prior to starting to hit on any of the CO2? Or?
Not all of it, but the oxygen reacts mostly first, and then the steam, and then the CO2 last.
Okay.
But if you quantified that, I don't think we have an answer for that.
Oh, I think it's a good project.
Thank you.
Now, the one question that the Trash Cash Company formed at USF, is your technology you're developing, is it in collaboration with them, or your catalyst development is a new development?
So the project that the undergrad that I mentioned, who was working in the plant design group on the economic portion, his project that he's setting up right now, hopefully it's to start in the future, it's more along the lines of trash to cash. It's more than mine.
So this is a new catalyst, because I know that under the trash to cash there was a catalyst development as well. So I'm just trying to understand, this is a continuation of that catalyst development, or this is a new catalyst?
Modification of it, but this is more fundamental research. That project's more at the applied stage now, or we're trying to be at the applied stage, is maybe a better way to say it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all the same catalyst. Yeah.
A given catalyst would catalyze those reactions
different than it. Yeah.
So you could optimize on one
versus the other. Within some reason. Yeah. Yeah. So he was. When the last question was asked. You repeat the question, Nana.
John, did you ask me to repeat my question?
No, Tim Vinson asked a question in the middle. I don't think you guys, we started discussing it, and I don't think you guys heard it.
Mr. Vinson was asking about whether one catalyst in the reaction pathway slide, whether one catalyst can essentially do all the work, and if it can be tuned to get the conversions and the ratios that we would like.
Okay.
So I was wondering if you have an optimized catalyst for reaction one, for example, and you have a different optimized catalyst for reaction two, is there the possibility for having a heterogeneous catalyst mixture in your reactor so that you can more easily, rather than try to make one catalyst that's the same, if you have a mixture of three different catalysts in the reactor? Or two.
Yeah. Yes.
You see what I'm saying?
We might be doing that anyways, because.
Oh, for sure.
No, I mean that part. But like, and even here, the series, the metal might be doing everything for the steam reforming or the oxidation, whereas the CO2 might be more involved with the oxide, right? So some of the components, since we already have a multi-component catalyst, some components may be working better for certain reactions than other reactions. So you know, that's pushing our level of understanding of what's happening at the molecular level, probably, in the process.
All right, this is Matt from NREL. I have a less of a big picture question, but kind of a silly specific question about the CPR profiles. You might be able to guess. So definitely there's a big effect on adding the platinum to the nickel reduction. I was just kind of wondering on the 0.2% platinum, there's that low temperature feature. I was wondering if you had any ideas what might be going on there, or if that was...
I'm sorry, which one?
The 1%.
Or maybe it's that blue curve, or there's about the 1%, yeah. There's an extra feature that's not on the 2%, so it's not, I don't think, a loading effect, but I didn't know if you had any ideas what that extra feature was.
We have actually, we've noticed that too, and I've actually tried to come up with an educated guess as to why this particular sample does that, but we repeated it and it continued to do the same. It continued to have an extra peak, an earlier reduction peak. I'm not sure if it's if there was just water in the lines or if it was just that sample.
Sure.
But I noticed it. Yeah, but there is one more batch that catalyst that was made, but it hasn't been tested yet, which will be tested very shortly.
Okay. Some sort of precursor from the synthesis or extra water that's kind of in there. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, the same process for the 2% as the 1% when you're preparing the catalyst.
It's the same process. Yeah, the only difference is just the weight.
That's been a headache for not a reproduced it a few times and got to the point where she decided to make a new batch and test it again, but then the instrument was down for a while.
Yeah.
Say for this experiment she has a success rate of 75% without something going wrong, every error happened when she was running that sample. So
research is a headache.
I didn't want to say all these details after I'm sorry.
Probably to get that graph was twice as much time to get the rest of the figure.
Just put that one example. Are you kind
of excited? Do you keep them out of air?
Yeah.
They're fine in air?
Yeah, you can leave that room temperature.
Oh, okay. So what's next?
Reforming. Hopefully our reforming experiments. Very exciting. The exciting part comes next. This is relatively less exciting. The next portion, hopefully, then we move on to the heterotrophs portion, and we get hydrocarbons. Maybe.
Looks good.
Thank you.
Everybody on there?
Devin, Ms. Valvan, are you still on the line?
Yeah,
Matt from NREL. I don't have any more questions. I don't know about anyone else.
Thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedules.
Thank you.
Thank
you know,
that
work.
Was a good
presentation. To see the the reaction results.
Thank you,
Nada. Very, very interesting.
Thanks for calling in, everybody.
Right. Yeah. Have a nice afternoon, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Have a good day.
Thank you.